lend me your ears, for I have great news to proclaim. I have seen the first truly great science fiction movie of the 21st century, and its name is The Creator. I know, bold phrase, but this is PC. This is PCU, where you expect the unexpected. And boy, did I not expect that The Creative was going to hit like this. So, of course, you know, periodically we do episodes like this. I like to call these Armand Tries to Convince Pete to Watch Something episodes, where I've gone and seen something before, some of the rest of the team have seen it, and I make a desperate attempt to convince them that A, I'm actually knowledgeable, B, I'm not a complete idiot, and C, that the movie's actually good. If I succeed in C and blow A and B, I'm good. So, Pete, so The Creative.
Yes.
First off, what do you know about it?
So I only know what I've seen in the trailers. Rose and I watched the trailers several times. It gave me two vibes that I'll talk about right now. One is sort of that like Dune vibe of like everything's happening all over the universe and like all these different places and none of it really seems connected. There's a lot of really great imagery that just seems like, I don't know if this is prehistoric. I don't know if this is like, you know, advanced future. I don't know if this is alternate reality. I don't know. Like, it just feels like kind of that mishmash of fantasy and like high fantasy and sci-fi that we've seen. And I guess the second thought was, I don't know if this will be good or not, because those kinds of movies like have often been disappointing. All I could think to myself was, I want to see this. This looks too interesting not to see. That's what it is. It looks too interesting not to see, but I'm terrified it's going to be terrible.
Okay.
And that was the first thought in my head when I saw the trailer.
Okay. You said you had another thought too, though, right? You had two thoughts.
No, like the first was just like, this is all over the place. And then the second being like, I don't know if it's going to be good, but I really want it to be, because we haven't gotten anything like that in a very long time.
Yeah. I mean, like, look, so let me first give this thing its roses. This is not a franchise movie. This is not, you know, based off an existing IP. This is an original story, which I would say, one, is hard to come by in Hollywood generally these days. Two, especially rare for a science fiction film. And then three, I can't think of the last time that there was a black male lead in a major science fiction movie like this, and the names Will Smith or Denzel Washington, you know, name didn't appear. Now, granted, it's not like John David Washington is nobody. He is, of course, you know, you're unaware. He is Denzel Washington's son. So, you know, and no, he's not a Nepo baby. Like he can actually act and deserve, and I feel like he shows that he deserves it. So first things first, to kind of address some of the current concerns you said from the trailer. I agree. The trailer's all over the place. The reason why the trailer's all over the place is because this is basically a chase movie. So they're moving all over the place. So that's a big part of it. If I had to describe this movie as simply possible, I would say this is Blade Runner with a soul.
Okay, now for people who don't know or follow the show, like that is about as high praise as it gets, because Blade Runner is like, I know in your top 10.
Oh yeah,
especially for science fiction, like one of your greatest science fiction movies, your favorite science fiction movies of all time.
Oh yeah, I mean, I have every single cut of the movie that's ever been commercially released, and I love Blade Runner and I love Blade Runner's message. But I will always tell you, Blade Runner is a harsh film. Harrison Ford's character Rick Deckard is not a likable human being. Sean Young's character Rachel isn't particularly likable, and the movie is saved by Rutger Hauer and the emotion that he's able to convey at the end of the movie. And now take what Rutger Hauer gave to Blade Runner and pull that and stretch it over an hour and 30 or hour and 45 minutes. And that's what John David Washington and the cast of The Creator give us. It really is so I'm trying to make this as spoiler-free as possible.
Right. So I was going to say, like, are you able to say without spoilers how it's possible that this movie is that good?
Yes. Yes. I think the thing that makes it different is that the movie philosophically has a lot to say, but it doesn't bludgeon you over the head with it. The messages are there if you want them. If you don't want them, it's just an enjoyable movie. But I feel like there's a presumption in the West that artificial intelligence is inherently going to be evil. we've seen that that's like the most popular sci-fi trope that we've grown up with, right? You know, the Terminator, the Lawnmower Man, whenever, you know. And so, first off, this is a film that I feel like I wonder if it's going to be appreciated more by international audiences than American audiences. And I say that because I feel like having watched this film and some of its decision-making, it seems like it has much more of a relationship to Asian cinema than anything that I've seen coming out of the States. I will also say there are some definite lone wolf and cub vibes ish in it. I mean, because it's literally, I mean, it's a dude
traveling. Which we've had a lot of that in sci-fi lately.
Oh, you mean like the Mandalorian?
Right.
so yeah, and I mean, like, look, if that's a lone wolf and cub is a legendary manga series that has been ripped off in the States for years. I mean, all the way down to Tom Hanks in A Road to Perdition. That's literally Lone Wolf and Cub, but they said it in the 1920s gangsters. So, but what I will say is this, is that John David Washington's character, Joshua, was an intel agent who was sent in to try to find the head, basically the leader of the AI resistance. In this alternate future, there has been a nuclear strike in Los Angeles that allegedly artificial intelligence was responsible for. As a consequence, the United States goes through the process of trying to wipe all AIs out of existence on the entire planet. This, however, is the Western approach. A lot of the nations, specifically the Asian nations that are shown in the movie, they have embraced the view that artificial intelligence, its existence matters and is equivalent to humans. So when you see the AIs in those societies, they're viewed as people, not as things, which is very different from how the Western characters approach it. From the very onset, the Western characters are basically like, look, we're right on the verge of winning this. There's this one secret weapon that they've got left. We find it and we take it out and it's over. And it just so happens that this weapon happens to be a child. It's a robot, but it's a child. And so the tension for John David Washington's character Joshua is that what he really wants more than anything is to find his wife, played by Gemma Chan, who was her father was the leader of the AI resistance. She doesn't know that her husband John David Washington is actually an American spy. John David Washington's character Joshua doesn't really know the full story. And I can't get into more of that about Gemma Chan's character without spoiling it. But so I'll say it starts off with that premise. So he agrees to go on a black ops mission to go find this weapon for the purposes of ending the war. But really they've promised him that, hey, we've got footage of Maya and she's alive. So, but the movie plays with you. You can share your, in a lot of these other countries where AI has been embraced, you can share your likeness. So an AI can have a human face. Mm-hmm. So so his wife had donated her likeness. So when he's wandering around trying to find her, there's a bunch of AIs that look just like her. I have to say this.
I never thought about that.
Madeline Una Voles, who plays Alfie, this is the best child actor I've seen since the young lady we encountered playing Princess Leia in Obi-Wan on the Disney Plus series.
Damn.
This, for her performance, I have got to tell you, I have never been reduced to tears in a science fiction movie, ever. The last time was probably when I was a child and I cried when Vader died in Luke's arms. Like, he just got his dad back and his dad's gone. But I will tell you, by the time we got down to the last 15 minutes of the movie, I realized I was crying. I turned over, and looked at my oldest son. He was crying. I turned over and looked at my youngest son. He was crying. And again, I feel like this is a movie that I don't know that Western audiences are going to accept, because it's, when you look at Gundam, when you look at a lot of Asian cinema, a lot of times there's a consequence for being the hero. You don't get to sail in and everything goes well. You ride off into the sunset. That's very much a Western trope. And I feel like other cultures tell other stories. And just how, as you know, Lone Wolf and Cub has a tragic ending, because obviously Lone Wolf doesn't survive the whole story. Dagoro does. Without going into spoilers, there are characters that will need to make sacrifices to get things to a place. But I will say this movie has a kindness and a charm to it. And I hate to sound like, you know, overly preachy, but there was a basic goodness of the message of the movie, which is the fact that AIs could, I mean, we always assume that when we make artificial intelligence, we're going to make something smarter than us and that it's going to take us out. This movie kind of proposes the alternate idea. What happens if we make AI and it's imbued with all the good things about mankind, including our rationality, and they go, why would we want to waste time out wiping out humanity? We don't understand this violence thing. Like, we'll defend ourselves, but like, I'm alive and you're alive. And why should that be a source of conflict? I don't want to replace you. I literally, and so and I will say this, the movie does a great job of explaining the character's motivations. Like, when you're trying to figure out why would Joshua, John David Washington's character, why would his wife, Maya, Gemma Chan's character, you know, be involved in all this? And when you hear the story of, I was an orphan. I was raised by AIs because they can't produce their own children. So they have no compunction about raising orphaned human children. So she's like, I just see them as people. You know, so it's that idea and the hopefulness of it matters a lot. And then it's an exquisitely cast movie. I mean, on top of, you know, everything, all the praise I've had, you know, for Mr. Washington, for our young friend, Miss Vols, for Miss Chan, you have people like Allison Janney and Ken Watanabe playing. And this is not a movie where there are a lot of roles. So these characters matter a lot. Like, we spend a good little chunk of time with Allison Janney, and
who I love in just about everything she's in, because she just has that like fun energy. Like, she's great at playing characters who either don't give a shit or care too much.
I would not. I know this is gonna sound hyperbolic. I would not be surprised if she got a Best Supporting Actress nod for this movie. Would not, because for almost every character in the movie, I feel like if you take that actor out that role, the movie is reduced. Mm-hmm. There are not a lot of characters. So every character moment matters. And I just think the care of the storytelling and the fact that it was actually a hopeful story about the future in its own kind of like darkish way. The one spoiler that I feel like I can share that won't kind of alter the movie is, one of the reasons why I say this is a hopeful movie, when Ken Watanabe's character, who happens to be an AI by the name of Harun, when he's talking to John David Washington's character, Joshua, he's like, did you know that the nuclear strike was a human coding error? He's like, we're not responsible for launching a nuke at Los Angeles. He was like, the humans did, and they blamed us. And then he asks, do you know what's going to happen to the West when this war ends? He's like, nothing. He's like, we've never contemplated doing anything to hurt anybody. The only reason why we're fighting is we want peace. And it's kind of like, you wrap all that together and it's like it's all of a sudden, because this is Garth Edwards, the guy who gave us Rogue One, and you do start to get some feels of, this is the Rebel Alliance. These are, you know, because they're the Rebel Alliance because morally they're on the high ground. And it's how I feel like every character in the story comes to a place where they have to embrace humanity in whatever form it presents itself in, or they have to reject it. But without going into spoilers, that's almost that's a lot of what I can say. I will tell you this, the visuals are stunning. The visuals are not there for eye candy. The visuals exists solely in service of the story. And whenever you know, whoever's listening, when you watch this, when you see The Nomad for the first time, you're gonna go, one, I absolutely believe America would build a weapon like that. Two, it's absolutely utterly terrifying. And three, I almost wish I could see it in another movie. Because it really is kind of like, I hate to say it, I felt it's very Death Star-ish. it's very much like a low budget, like Palpatine couldn't get the $17 trillion he needed for the full Death Star. So they built a mini one for about $1.5 trillion. That's what it feels like. So I will say this. The Creator is not a 100% original movie. There are lots of places that I feel like it's influenced by things, or it pulls from things. It pulls from Lone Wolf and Cub. It pulls from Blade Runner. It pulls from Star Wars. But I feel like what it does is it integrates all of those pieces and it gives you a story about humanity and the human spirit, and the idea that artificial intelligence is not an adversary we're creating, is that we are creating our humanity's children, and that we have to figure out how can we live and embrace that. So just a great, profound movie. As a matter of fact, you know what, Pete? The last sci-fi movie that left me with this much to think about was Ex Machina. Like, that's how good this was. Mm-hmm. Like, this is an action movie that somehow sits in between something that's pure drama like Ex Machina, and is basically a dramatic action movie like Blade Runner. And this occupies this sweet spot in between those two. So you are engaged intellectually, and you are definitely engaged emotionally. And I will dare anybody to survive the last 8 minutes of this movie and not cry. And I, all I'll say is, I would love it for you, Pete, to see the movie. And then we do a spoiler podcast on it. Because I feel like the themes that are there, and just the symmetry and the balance and like the closing the loop, there are no story points that are wasted. For a movie that has you zipping and running from the United States to various parts of Asia, it's a movie that there's no wasted time. There's no filler. It's just movie, and it's fantastic. So I know this is hyperbolic. This is my new favorite science fiction movie. I put this above Blade Runner for me. I really, really do. And I feel like this movie is everything that they wanted Blade Runner 2049 to be, and it couldn't be, because it could not get the emotionality of the characters downright. Ryan Gosling's, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying, because it feels like when you try to do a high concept, whether that's high concept with a message or high concept because that's the source material, let's say Dune, it's a hard thing to do. To do that and have characters that we care about. Like, you only ever really get one or the other. Characters that, you know, that you feel for, characters you relate to. I mean, that's E.T. You know, there's not a lot of concept with that. And that was a lot, you know, when you talk about, you know, families crying in the theater together, like, that's the first thing I think of is, you know, when we all collectively, those of us in, you know, in our mid to late 40s, saw E.T., and it was just like it was waterworks. We didn't even know how to handle that. And there hasn't been a lot since then that really tackles both, right? Managed to do both at the same time, and those are some pretty amazing movies.
Yeah, and I mean, for me, the other thing that was funny was, you know, I was talking to my wife because the creator had a lot of Elysium vibes. Elysium was a movie that I think came out in 2016 with Matt Damon. Mm-hmm. You know, Diego Luna, yeah. before we had really discovered Diego Luna, Sergio Mora was in it as well. So basically everybody we would see in Narcos in a couple of years was in Elysium. That movie had a lot of the same themes that are in The Creator, but it could never establish the emotions of the character. And so it turns into a real great sci-fi fest to watch, but it doesn't have enough heart. And I think that if there was anything for me that sets this movie apart, it has heart in abundance. Like, I could strip all the sci-fi out this movie, and what I'm left with is a story where there is a man who is grieving for the wife that he has lost. And he finds himself in a position where he is trying to take care of this child. And that there is a connection between that child and his past. And somehow the relationship that he builds with that child will be the thing that defines him as a human being in ways that he does not understand, and that child brings out the best version of him that even he doesn't believe exists in him anymore. So take away the visuals, which are great. The visuals are great. The robots, I loved the design. I mean, like, I haven't enjoyed, I mean, it's, I hate to say it, but it's little things. It's like, why would you put ears on a robot? So you know, I mean, it's like there were so many intelligent design choices that I've kind of felt like I've got this coffee table book, like the movie art of Sid Mead. Sid Mead was a visual arts designer. He, all the visuals for Blade Runner, you know, a lot of the concepts, he came up with them. I haven't seen conceptual designs that were this interesting since then. Everything, as a matter of fact, I can't remember his name now, but the guy who directed Tron Legacy, and who directed that Tom Cruise movie, the one in the future and all that. The visuals and how they were designed were so pitch perfect for the movie. Nah, man,
Joseph Kosinski?
yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, best visuals I've seen since then. And again, this is not a big IP. Like, there ain't gonna be a creator of the prequel. They've created the like this very much is a one-off. And then and again, I feel like that's what made it feel like much more something to me that kind of came out of Asian cinema. It's because there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. There's an end, and it's over. Where we live in a world now where everything is a franchise. This is not a movie that's intended to launch a franchise. This is a movie that's about this story. So no, man, I loved the cast. I loved the visuals. I loved the message of the story. I loved its commentary about U.S. imperialism, because the U.S. basically goes across the whole planet trying to wipe out AI, irregardless of what the rest of humanity thinks, which seems very much like the type of thing that the American government can do when it wants to. So no, I mean, just putting it all together, this is for me the best science fiction film I've seen in the 21st century thus far. And I have seen some good films, and I'm not casting aspersions on them, but none of them touched me in a genuine emotional way. Not like, oh, I feel bad that dude died, I really like that character. No, more like the oh God, this is how it's going to end. Like, this is what we're doing. And then the moment comes, and then the moment passes, and you're like, oh, this was so beautiful. It's so tragic, but it's so wonderful. It's such a swirl of emotions where it's like literally in the end, I won't tell you which character, but there's a character, and they're kind of watching the kind of the culmination of everything that's happened. And first they're crying, and they're crying for everything that they've lost. And then there's a moment where they just stop crying and they start laughing because they can see everything good that's coming. And it was such a perfect way to end the movie with that duality of that emotions where I can have profound grief for what I've lost, but I can look at my future and have profound joy at all of the love and hope that lays out right beyond the horizon.
So, how does a movie like that manage to accomplish that without being corny or without being like without telegraphing it so much that it feels like, it's unoriginal or, kind of paint by numbers? When, 'cause we've seen movies with that kind of formula, or maybe not that kind of formula, but that kind of goal. Like, I want people to feel this way. You can make that promise, but it's hard to deliver genuine emotional content in a movie because we are moviegoers are cynical people sometimes.
They are. I think the movie excels in doing this for a couple of reasons. I think one, the movie treats its audience as being intelligent. I am a burgeoning young writer. Alan Moore is one of my inspirations. So is Octavia Butler. I have done a BBC Maestro class that was presented by Alan Moore. And one of the things that he talks about is that assume that your audience is intelligent. Don't explain everything to them right away. Let them deduce and figure out. And so I'll say, first off, there's a level of suspense throughout the movie because you're constantly learning new information that allows you to reinterpret everything that you've seen. The movie uses, parallel storytelling where you get flashbacks. Like there isn't like a long period of time where we're seeing all of the backstory and then all the major events start happening and we're off to the races. We're already off to the races. We're getting flashbacks to stuff from the past. And so I feel like it keeps the movie balanced. You're always moving towards the direction of the finality and what's coming, but you're increasingly getting a deeper understanding of everything that's happened while you're watching it. And I think, I think those two things, and then I think at the same time, the movie's not afraid to let actors act. It's an action movie, but it's also a drama. And a drama without, it works because there's tension between the characters that makes sense. There's none of this, I don't like you because I don't like you. Like people, like the characters are human. They're capable of disliking somebody, going through an experience and realizing, yeah, I read you wrong. You're better than I thought. You're better than I thought you were. It is what it is, and we're going forward. But lastly, man, I think it's about love. As antiquated and hokey as it sounds, it's about love in all its forms. Love in terms of adopted families, you know, for those, you know, those of everybody doesn't get, you know what I'm saying, the apple pie. Mm-hmm. This shows the beauty of blended families and adopted families. It shows the beauty of love between a parent and a child. It shows the beauty of love behind from people. Mm-hmm. And as a daddy, I felt like there were some moments, it shows the greatness of children. I always tell people that I have loved coaching more than I've ever loved being a lawyer, because coaching puts me with little people and you realize that human beings are awesome. We start off awesome. Mm-hmm. We get screwed up during the process, but it's like, you know, when you first get here, you know, you're 5, 6, 7, 8 years old. You're awesome. Fairness is a concept to you that makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. You know, not being a jerk does not seem like, oh, I shouldn't say mean things. So all of that, man, I feel like, you know, all that is stitched together well with it being directed by a director who had a clear vision of what he wanted to do and what he wanted to achieve and had the skills and the experience. Like, I do not think Garth Edwards, if he had done this movie before Rogue One, I do not think that this movie is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
This is a creative who literally had a chance to learn all the skills that were necessary from his last film and his prior films. And then this is a really well-cast movie. And I think when you throw that all together, that's the end result. In addition to the fact that it's got some great visuals and some great acting and great themes. But no, I mean, I can genuinely say without exaggeration, I really haven't. The movie pulled on strings in my heart as a father. Mm-hmm. that were so powerful that I was kind of just like, you know, I had a moment with my youngest son. I was like, you realize I would do that for you, right? Like, you know, if push came to shove, you know, if dad's got to die for you to be okay, that's exactly what's going to happen. And he's like, well, I wouldn't want you to. I'm like, I know you wouldn't want me to, but that's what dads do. Dads make sure their babies are okay. The rest of it, we worry about later on. And so that's it, man. It's just a great movie with a great heart and a great soul and a kindness and a sweetness with great visuals, great acting, great dialogue. And last part, I almost forgot. And somehow it manages to have a sense of humor. There are there are some genuine, like there is a gunfight scene without going into the specifics of the details of it. And and Joshua, John David Washington's character, goes, is anybody having fun? Did anybody have fun? Because it was a bunch, because he's hiding in a van with a bunch of kids in it. And everybody else is shaking and quivering. And one little boy throws his hand up and says, I had fun. So, and Josh was kind of shocked. And he's like, oh, okay. All right, you're a real one. All right.
Uh-huh.
So, no, man. So, for all of those reasons, I will tell you, even if you don't like science fiction movies, I will tell you, the creator is worth watching. I am mad that I did not buy tickets to see it in the IMAX, because having seen it and knowing that it's leaving the IMAX theater soon, I feel like I've been mm-hmm. cheated a little bit by not being able to see it on a big, big screen. But this will be the movie that probably makes me buy a 4K television. Because when this thing comes out on digital, on day one, I'm buying it on digital. And I'm buying a hard copy just in case, like, you know, there's an EMP that fries everything. When the world's burning, I want to be able to find a place where electricity still works so I can watch this movie as I drift off to the hereafter.
Wait, is this that movie now? This is the one, like, when the asteroid's coming?
Yes.
Like, I'm gonna throw this one up real quick.
Yes, you know what? I will say this. If an alien race discovered humanity after we were extinct, and I was trying to figure out a way to convey the decency of the human spirit, I would point at this movie and say, at our best, this is who we were. And in a world that's kind of dark right now, it's special and it's rare when you have a movie that makes you hopeful for what the future might be. And I think, again, as a parent, you know, being a parent is predicated on hope. You're hoping that somehow the future of your children is remarkably brighter than anything you've seen or experienced or you've known. And this film has got that in it too. So, great, masterful movie. I can't wait to see what John David Washington does next. I really look forward to the career of the young lady who played Alfie. She was just an absolutely fantastic actress. Madeline Una Voles. One of the best child actor performances I've ever seen before. I rank it next to, like I said, the young lady who played Princess Leia. I would rank it next to Macaulay Culkin in Home Alone. Just in terms of a young actor who, despite their age, has the emotional gravitas to carry a movie. Because you cast somebody else in that role, I don't know that it hits the same way. Her portrayal of Alfie has such a kindness and a sweetness and a decency to it that you stop thinking about her being a robot and she's just a child.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, that's that suspension of disbelief, right? When they can hook you into forgetting the fact that I'm watching CGI, because real human beings have ears. So this is an actor that's had that their ears digitally replaced. You know, we're rotating circles, but I don't care because it's a kid. And I want to know what happens to the kid. So with that, this is the highest I've ever recommended any movie in the history of PCU. I know this is going to come back to bite me in my tuchus. but yes, if I had to make an official determination on where I rank this movie in terms of sci-fi, I'm saying it not only cracks the top 10, it sits probably somewhere in my top 5, at absolute worst 6. The only reason why, because it is derivative. It does pull from a lot of different places. So on that level, I have to give credence and acknowledge, like, you know, but this movie doesn't happen without Blade Runner, right? I can't pretend that. So it's a movie that stands upon the shoulders of the films that came before it, but it manages to stand out anyway. Well, on that note, did you have anything
I think at this point, I just have to see the movie. Like, you've accomplished your mission, because I can't. Now it's just curiosity. Now it's just, you know, pure curiosity that I want to go. If for nothing else, to be like, I don't know what the hell Armand was even talking about.
Well, I mean, hey, but I'll take it. I started this podcast by saying if I failed at A and B, I would accept C. So I might still be an idiot, but he's going to watch the movie. So this has been a successful effort. So I will be writing a review of this movie for Pop Culture Uncovered. Hopefully I'll have it finished by the time you hear the sound of my voice, and you can go check out that review where I will gushingly provide one of wonderful examples of the reason why I gave this movie 5 stars and think it's so great, and how I'm really like, I might have already come home and hopped on my Apple TV app to try to figure out when the digital release date for the movie was, so I could pre-order, so make sure I pre-order it as early as possible. But definitely check us out at popcultureuncovered.com. Got an amazing team of writers banging out great content on a regular basis. Definitely check them out. Check us out on social media. Just search Pop Culture Uncovered. Definitely check us out on Patreon. And check us out on YouTube. Just search Pop Culture Uncovered. So for Pete, this is Armand. Thank you very much for spending some time with us. Go see the creator. You're going to be happy. You're going to be happy.
All right.
And then you're going to call me and tell me that you're happy. And I'm going to say, I knew you were going to be happy. I'm happy for you. We're happy. We're happy together. Good night, y'all. Have a good one. Peace.